Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 26th of February. Very nice to have you with us. Last Friday of the month, hard to believe, but there we are. And it's very nice to have you with us. We welcome you. We hope you'll join in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get to the actual discussion. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, but I see something I'm not sure I like. You're drinking out of a cup that says Morning Joe on it.
Well, that's
is that you, Morning Joe, or is that Morning Joe, who I don't like, I don't care for him, Morning Joe?
There is a story behind that mug, and I will gladly tell it to you.
America is all about pluralism and people having different opinions.
I suppose you can't argue with that.
There's a story behind this mug, and I will certainly tell it to you off the air.
Since this is not a visual show, that's a good idea.
I certainly will tell you off the air. Author and activist and just all around perfect person, Barbara Smith is with us. Well, I know.
Delusional.
Okay. We love you. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you so
Always
much.
Always very nice to have you with
great
us.
Great to see you too.
You know what's great about Barbara when she's not on the panel, if she hears something that annoys her, she lets us know
it is a
by
miss.
Email.
Yes.
I understand my letter did get read.
Oh, indeed
yes.
It did.
Oh, yes, it did.
We wouldn't do that.
Be like I had to go to the doctor. I'm sitting outside the doctor's office. Sending my email, because that's so much more important than being on time.
Well, of course. You know, there are things that get us angry. We know that. And I appreciate that, Barbara. Want to know what gets me angry? No, never mind.
Yeah, we all know. Not to worry.
And Libby Post.
It's called oversharing. Hi.
Good morning. Libby Post is a political
consultant.
Is that right? You consult politics.
Tell people what to do.
And you are with us today, and we thank you very much. Rosemary is out, and you're filling in, and we appreciate that, so thank you very much. Let's talk about what's going on in the world, and that is, now I thought we wouldn't really be talking too much about the debate today, because I just figured, well, it's the 10th one, it'll be another debate, what could happen? Well, it turned out to be very raucous. It turned out to be, and I guess in many ways this was to be expected. You have one candidate who has a target on their back because they're the front runner, and the other two candidates, there were five on the stage, but two of those four really went for blood, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. It seems as though that Rubio landed the most punches by all accounts. The question is it too little? Is it too late? And is there such a thing of landing a punch against Donald Trump?
Or will it, in fact, help Trump, which is a possibility? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm no great Trump fan, but Rubio looks very, very desperate. To me, I don't think that helps Rubio. Now, there's nothing he said last night that we haven't been treated to before about how Trump made his money, or the fact that he inherited, or that he lied. We've heard all of that stuff before.
Absolutely. The one thing that surprised me, though, was how Trump took it, which was he seemed off his game.
Yeah,
he seemed like he was taken, like some of the air was taken out of him.
Yeah.
By these shots, and it was.
Well, Rubio was not letting him open his mouth.
No.
As soon as he started to talk, Rubio started yelling at him.
Which is exactly how Trump operates in every other debate.
He's constantly like that.
Oh yes.
I don't think so.
Anybody says something, you're an idiot. You're a loser. You're this. You're that. You don't know what you're talking about. But that's besides the point, Alan. The fact of the matter is that Donald Trump is operating as the schoolyard bully. And Marco Rubio, while I don't like him and I don't agree with his politics, punched him in the nose a little bit last night. And I thought it was good. He bullied him up just a bit. But look, the man, we're dealing with a man who is being supported by David Duke, from the former head of the KKK. You know, we've got robocalls going out saying, vote for Trump, not the Hispanic, to all GOP voters. I mean, this is a time
I'm sorry,
in our
I missed
country.
The David Duke.
David Duke is...
It's on the front page of the New York Post today fact that David Duke has come and said that if you believe what I believe, then you will vote for Donald Trump.
Right. No, it was the Daily News, not the Post.
The
Post said Donald did okay because I saw it this morning.
Yeah, that's right. No, it was the Daily News. My apologies.
But the thing is, that settles the question. Then is Donald Trump a racist? And I know that was a discussion that was going on yesterday.
Well,
if there was a question yesterday.
I remember on the civil rights marches when some very unsavory characters tried to get online in the 1960s and, you know, the Communist Party and others. And it was always a very difficult thing. How can Trump be responsible for what some idiot says about him?
I don't think that's not how things work. People respond to the messages that they like and that appeal to them. So to act as if these people are...
Oh, Alan. Stop
I don't
it.
Think
you okay, need to so say here's if Alan, here's the
okay,
here's
so David evidence. Duke called up and said, Alan Chartok runs a wonderful station, WAMC.
I don't know where the camera is.
It's right there.
Okay,
so here's the deal.
I don't get that.
Here's the deal. So if Donald Trump is not a racist, he disavows David Duke. He disavows all of this hate speech that's going on his behalf, and he's not. He knows. He knows that this is getting him votes. I don't know if in his heart of hearts, look, we're all racist. We all are born, those of us who are white.
Really?
And we all have implicit bias no matter
who
we are.
Let's not make it the debate
last
night.
So I don't know, you know, if he really is as hateful as his rhetoric is, but he's spewing rhetoric and he's letting other people do it on his behalf and speaking for him, and he's not disavowing himself of it. And that's the issue.
So Cruz, the right wing Cruz who is beating up on Trump, is a good guy all of a sudden?
I never said that.
Well, you're implying it.
No, I'm not.
How is that being implied?
Yeah, she is. She is. Yeah.
No, I'm not. No.
Yes, you are.
No.
So can I?
How is
I?
I'm sorry. I don't see that logic.
All of a sudden, she's saying, "Okay, they were right to beat up on Trump. Cruz, the most right-wing guy of all, and clearly, you want to talk about the R word, is right at the top of the list in terms of where they're going."
I'm so sorry. Wasn't.
Well, I'm not hearing anything from you about that, Libby.
Because we weren't
and
talking
how come
about
I'm,
him.
Well,
wait. We started. Yeah. Let's just dial
sorry,
back
Libby,
and go
I'm not
back.
Buying it.
We
okay,
started
fine.
With a discussion about what was on the front page of the Daily News,
right?
And
here.
That was that daily that. What's his name? David Duke said that if you believe what I believe, then you will vote for Trump.
Right.
Ergo, we make
the
connection
discussion
then.
About
yes.
Ergo.
So
Donald
the thing
Trump.
Is, we want to expand it to talk about the other Republicans. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, really. You want to talk about Cruz? He's deadly. He's a
horrible
person.
You're finally
person.
Getting around to that, are
oh,
you,
please.
Living?
I've been talking about this for months.
Yeah,
give
right.
Me a break.
But it's all
it's
about
just because
these...
I like Hillary and you like Bernie. That's what this is all about.
No, I like both of them.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter is that I think Trump got a little bloodied up last night. Rubio grew a set. We'll see what happens. I mean, whether or not this is enough to overcome Trump's lead in the polls or in the primaries remains to be seen.
And I just wanted to get back to this thing of how do you define someone as a racist? Does it make a difference if the messages that people respond to align up with, you know, what is generally understood to be racism, xenophobia, nativism, et cetera. This is, I held this up, and I don't know if the people who watched, you know, this.
The streaming.
Online, if they could actually see it. But this is the magazine that I was referring to yesterday in my letter, which is the Intelligence Report Quarterly from the Southern Poverty Law Center to whatever.
Yeah, good.
Okay, from the Southern Poverty Law Center, and it's their annual tracking of all the hate activity in the United States, which they do an incredibly comprehensive job of. And imagine my surprise when I opened it up 2 days ago, and there, front and center on the cover, is Donald Trump. It's the year in hate and extremism. And about Trump, they say, a year that began with bloody Islamist attacks on Paris's Charlie Hebdo magazine and ended with jihadist massacres in France and San Bernardino, California, has sparked a major wave of violence and hatred directed at American Muslims. And the fact that major presidential candidates, plural, are shrilly attacking Muslims hasn't helped. So,
by the way, Eve agrees with both of you. She writes, completely agree with Libby and Barbara. Some of us will not forget that Trump created and funded a campaign to impose a death penalty on the Central Park Five. Young men of color later proved not guilty, subject of POV documentary. What is in his heart is anybody's guess. What he's done in public, racist record. And that's from Eve. And I don't disagree. I don't disagree that Trump has a racist message. I also want you to understand that I think the same thing is true true of Trump, of Cruz.
I agree with you, and I disagree with you
that everybody who's white is racist. By the way,
Alan, it's about having.
Yes, I did,
and it's about having a recognition of that. Those of us who are white are born into white privilege, and we all have a little bit of what we've been taught within us. It's just the way it is.
And when we were talking, cross-talking against or over each other, one of the things that I tried to insert is that all people have implicit bias. All people.
Including black people, right?
That's what I'm trying to talk about.
Maybe they all.
And the way that we can demonstrate that is that you can go online. I've mentioned this on the show before. You can go online, put in implicit bias. There are tests, online tests that you can do.
Sure.
And people are often extremely surprised by what comes
out.
And I'm talking about black people and other people of color because we all get the messages. It's the sea that we swim in.
That's hard not to.
Well, earlier in our wonderful discussions here, Barbara, you and I had a conversation about this very thing as to whether black people could be racist in a white racist population. And I think I'm very happy with what you're saying now.
Well, the thing is, the implicit bias, and again, I've said this on the show before, we have white supremacy, we have racial oppression, we have racism, we have race relations, we have prejudice, we have bigotry. They're on a continuum. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, when you get up to racism, which is near the top of that hierarchy of inequality and discrimination. When you get up to racism, you have to have the ability to change people's lives, opportunities, and chances based upon your beliefs.
Racism, for me,
is a system that is institutionalized and systematically gives some people power and other people less.
Okay. Irene checks in. From her time in the London proletariat, and she says it is past time for Alan to think of retiring. I'm sick of him, always needing to have the first word, interrupting the women, inserting his opinions, even when he has not seen the debates or read the articles with the info discussed. And that's from Irene.
Okay.
I want to go to some more letters, and then we'll go to a break.
Oh, you want some more letters? Okay.
More.
As much as I don't like Rubio, he was right to fight back in last night's debate. That's all Trump understands, the law of club and fang. His methods are despicable, and he got a taste of it himself. Good. Paul says, Trump has no plan, no specifics. Even when he was challenged, he couldn't come up with anything definitive to say, and it didn't hurt him at all. Okay. Okay, we already read Irene's comment, and Lori says, Alan, Libby never said Cruz was a good guy. She actually did not mention Cruz. She did say that although she does not like Rubio, his politics, he gave Trump what he deserved. She said that later, by the way. One could easily assume she would feel the same about Cruz, knowing Libby, what she says in her politics. Stop trying to put words in other people's mouths. And John says, Libby is right about racism. Racism, you're soaking in it. And then Eve says, we did that one already. Thank you for that. And James says, and I'm really, really tired of Trump, and even more so his bigoted, ignorant, sometimes smart, dangerous supporters. To paraphrase Henry II, re Becket, it will not someone rid me electorally of this troublesome priest, con artist. And that's from Jim. Jamie says, from personal experience, a simple examination of Donald Trump's litigation, you will find that his method of resolution is to pay everyone off before their lawsuit gets in his way. When the complaints outweigh the profits, he abandons the project, usually through bankruptcy. How does do apply this to methodology to U.S. foreign policy?
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the underwriting, and then we'll come back. We'll tackle one more topic, and then we'll go to the news. We'll be right back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. We have a minute or two before we go to the news, and let's – do we have any –
Oh, there are more letters?
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do those real quick. And then when we come back, I want to talk about Hillary Clinton's remark that she regrets and that campaign moment yesterday. And then we'll get to other topics as well.
Okay, so Ray wrote, Libby is right. Alan seems to be more rabid than usual today. Okay. And Naomi says, Hey, Alan, sending you a cushion to soften the blow. Keep on trucking, Naomi. Be well. Do good works and keep in touch. Garrison Keillor. Okay. And Lisa says, Barbara, do we have to say black people, white people after reading Waking Up White? I'm so tired. Why we can't just be people? I like this sickness. Well, I feel like this sickness will never go away. Love your insight, Barbara. Alan, don't ever retire. And that's from Lisa. Well, there's a point at which you retire. That's when they grab you from the front
right.
and the back and bring
right.
you out the
feed
front door.
First. Yeah. That's how you're going to go out of here. Feed first.
Right. I'd like to respond to that.
Yes.
Are we ever going to get over being able to talk about black and white? Not in this present society. Maybe in the millennium, you know, a couple of thousand years from now. But the thing is that I don't have any problems in identifying with racial labels or our names, because that's who I am. I'm mm-hmm. proud to be a black person. So
we are going to go take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Libby Post, making up the group this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments again. Roundtable at WAMC.org. As I mentioned, we want to talk about the Hillary Clinton remark. Black voters are the linchpin of Hillary Clinton's strategy for winning the South Carolina Democratic presidential primary, which is tomorrow. And as a result, her campaign has put racial justice issues at the forefront of her agenda. But an event on Wednesday night, Clinton was vocally confronted by an activist questioning her past support for policies that had a disproportionately negative effect on African Americans. Ashley Williams is a 23-year-old activist from Charlotte. She interrupted Clinton during a private fundraiser in Charleston on Wednesday night. Williams stood and demanded an apology from Clinton for the high incarceration rate for black Americans and confronted her with the words of a speech Clinton delivered 20 years ago, voicing support for the now debunked theory of super predators. They are often the kinds of kids that are called super predators, Clinton said in 1996 at the height of anxiety during her husband's administration about high rates of crime and violence. No conscience, no empathy. We can talk about why they ended up that way, but first we have to bring them to heel. The last part of the quote was written on a large hand-lettered sign that Williams held up as Clinton spoke to her donors and supporters. And ultimately, Clinton did apologize and say that she was sorry for making the remark, saying that she regretted making the remark in 1996. And I was just reading from the Washington Post. Who wants in first?
What a show.
go Barbara.
A day's work in an hour, right?
Right.
We talked about this in relationship to the Michelle Alexander article that was in The Nation a few weeks ago, and that article is cited in this Washington Post
yes.
article about why no black person should ever vote for Clinton. And she had many, many examples, primarily criminal justice decisions that were made during that administration that seemingly Hillary Clinton agreed with. And she cited that very quote that the young woman who's a protester cited. It's really very difficult when you're in front of the nation and everything you've ever done or said is up.
Sure.
Is up for grabs. I don't really have a lot of insight about that. I did want to mention that Michelle Alexander is the author of The New Jim Crow, of that book. So, you know, people should find that article, and I think it's very insightful. But I don't have a lot more to say right this moment.
I'm interested in what Libby has to say about this.
Well,
And you too, Barbara. I mean,
right,
but you did.
You know, Hillary stood there next to Bill with the Defense of Marriage Act. She has changed. Her perspective on the gay community has definitely evolved. And now the majority of the LGBT community is backing her because we see her as somebody who can grow in her perspectives about a certain group of people. And she has embraced the community and did more as Secretary of State to deal with international LGBT human rights than anybody else has ever done. And so, yes, some of the things she has said in the past are insulting to lots of different people, but we have to give all candidates the ability to change. And look, we gave it.
And you do that with Trump too, right, Libby?
But he used to be much more, I wouldn't say progressive, but liberal. He used to be much more liberal. Mm-hmm. There are clips of him saying he's pro-choice, he's pro-gay rights, he's this, he's that. Now he's saying he'll, if he's elected, he'll replace the Supreme Court and make sure that we overturn marriage equality.
By the way, I'm sorry, just for, and I don't want to dilute the very important discussion that we're having, but after the debate last night, Chris Cuomo interviewed Donald Trump as he was walking off the debate stage, and they were asking the question about the audits. Did anybody see this? They were talking about the audits.
His financials are being audited.
And the reason that they're being audited is because he was being unfairly picked on because he's a Christian.
Oh, give me a break.
Is that what Trump said?
Yes.
Whatever you say.
Sure.
I thought, is that he's being discriminated against because of his Christian values?
Well, he's like joining all the rest of them that fits, there's a war on Christmas.
That fits only into what you were saying a varying of what he says.
I mean, there are clips of him saying, if I ran as a Republican, these people are so stupid they'd believe anything that comes out of my mouth. I mean, this is why I find him, he's duplicitous, and I really don't know if he really believes what comes out of his own mouth or if he's just doing this to gain power and a new demographic for a new low-end hotel chain, which is what I've been saying all along. You know, so I just don't know if he really believes, but I also wonder if any of them really believe the hate that they spew, or if it's just a matter of being in the right place in the right time to garner power using that hateful rhetoric.
I want to get back to Hillary Clinton,
yes,
though.
Sure.
One of the things that was said in the article that was included in the article is that the protester questioned her about, so where are you now? You've had 20 years to have a more nuanced and more realistic perspective about these very difficult issues of crime and the Black community, the criminal justice system, and people of color. What do you have to say now? And that, to me, was a really legitimate question.
Let's remember that when Bill Clinton left the presidency, it was often quoted that he was the first Black president.
Yeah, Toni Morrison said that, and I was very upset the day she said it. I've been upset since the day she said it.
Okay.
I never believed it. It's not true.
He was sort of liberal out of the South.
And also, he was comfortable with Black people. Mm-hmm. He is a civil rights era young person.
That's right.
And he was moved by what he saw growing up in Arkansas, as were some others. Not every white person who grew up in the South at that time felt the same way, even in his age group. But he's comfortable with Black culture. He lived through the transition of segregated musical culture, for example, in this country. I'm a part of the same generation, so I know what he was experiencing. We all experienced it, me from another vantage point. But the thing is that his comfort with Black people and probably his affection for Black people didn't make him a Black person.
Well, no. Doug says, super predators. Is it racist to assume use of the term super predator means Black? You're assuming all such criminals are Black. Plenty of white and Hispanic ones around. That's from Doug. And Joni,
well, fairness, it was in the context of the conversation of which she was embroiled in at that time.
Okay.
So,
well, she's apologized. I mean, then what is it that you want? You know, people change.
Right.
Okay. Joni said, Rubio bashed Trump for his Rubio-like repetitions. Rather clever. But my takeaway from last night's debate is the Trump repetition that he won't let anyone die on sidewalks. So bye-bye sidewalks. Okay, and Ted says, Alan's remarks. Okay, you're always lamenting about people putting words in your mouth. You just did it to Libby and then denied it. A taste of your own medicine,
Well, this is better than being called a neoliberal like I was on Monday.
And so. Jeffrey says, I hear the ghostly echo of jackboots, smell the arid stench of diesel fans patrolling the streets, capturing radio waves of dissent before sending in black-clad rakes to steal away freedom. One despot away from the camps and apartheid, and that's from the Reverend Jesse. Why is there 9:30 BBC News? I wrote about that in my program guide column.
Yes, I read that.
You can go
night.
Look at. You can go look for it. Okay.
We have to have it.
Yesterday. No, we don't have to. It's that. I already talked about it. Okay. Let's go to In 1998, People magazine article cited Trump shared that if he were to run for president, he would run as a Republican because they are the dumbest group of voters in the country. And he could lie to them and they would eat it up. He's just doing just that. I love the show. Keep it up, Adam. And Andrew said, thank you for all you do. Alan has earned the first word on discussions. I think plus his cohorts happily challenge and disagree with him as needed. This is what makes it the great show it is. I like having a gender balanced panel. I think this is key. By the way, folks, you're not in the studio, but if you were watching it, you would see what happens here. There are times that Joe says, who wants to go? And then nobody wants to go. And Joe will look at me and I'll go. You know, I mean, that's part of the way, you know, we do things here. But of course, I would much prefer to hear my colleagues than the other way around. And then,
why are you laughing?
You two are like family members. I feel like I'm at a family dinner.
You are the epitome of, not a member. Of graciousness, Alan.
And Mary,
I have to say.
What did you say?
You are so gracious.
I am.
Almost Southern in your graciousness.
Yeah, I get it. Mary says, Alan is the best. The roundtable wouldn't be the same without Alan. He keeps the balance and is often the most insightful contributor to discussions. That's from Mary. I like that letter. And Dan, on the other hand, takes a different view. And today the part of which will be played by Alan? What gives? I like the diversity of opinion when a guy like Rich is on, but the one thing I don't like is the nonsensical, contradictory nature of conservatives like Rich. Alan, please argue with substance, not for the sake of arguing. And thanks for all you do for this great station on Round Table. See? I'll take it. Yeah. Okay, Joe?
Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation. We have two or three more topics I want to get to. We'll probably get to two. And we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Two things I want to get to real quick. One is as we mentioned yesterday, and surprisingly, I haven't seen a lot on this, but we mentioned yesterday that As the brouhaha over a Supreme Court nominee continues, that there were very strong rumors that Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval was on the president's shortlist and was being asked. He officially yesterday withdrew his name from consideration as a possible Supreme Court nominee, notifying the White House after a conversation with both Republican and Democratic Senate Judiciary Committee members. So I thought that was fairly interesting.
Well, they got to him. I mean, clearly they got to him.
But did they get to him, or did he just think it was going to be like a fight that he wasn't going to win?
It could have been that. It could have been that, and it could have been that they got to him. And when he says he talked to Republicans, I can only imagine what they were saying on the other end of that telephone. And you ever want anything again in life, you better cut it out.
And I think he has other aspirations.
Sure.
He could position himself for national office. And if he did this, this would take himself out of the running. And
he wasn't going to get it.
And that's the other thing. He wasn't going to. I don't think Obama would have nominated him. I think that they were floating this trial balloon to make the Republicans say once more, we're not going to let a nominee go through, which is just they risk losing the Senate. The polls are showing if they don't approve a nominee, they risk losing the Senate, and they are so tone deaf they're not listening to anybody but themselves.
I couldn't agree more.
Read David Brooks's column this morning
brilliant.
In the Times.
Brilliant.
He makes this case about how they are just letting these people who are, I'm an outsider, but have no idea how to govern, take over everything, and so nothing gets done. Yeah. And this is the end result of it.
Well, I think the fact is that they are going to lose some Senate seats over this.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
Which is fine with me.
Because I think there's a basic sense of fairness on the part of the American people.
I do, too.
Which is, you got to do what the Constitution says. You can't make it up as you go along.
Right. I just think it's amazing that they are even saying this, and they're going to lose. They're losing credibility with the mushy middle by doing this, the swing.
Remember the name Melissa Click?
Sure.
No.
She is the professor who gained national notoriety during the protest at the University of Missouri. She has been fired.
Yeah.
She made headlines when a video of her pushing a reporter, I should note a student reporter.
I think he was a guy with a video camera.
I think it's...
should be noted. A reporter away from protesters went viral. She could be heard calling for muscle to toss out reporters trying to cover the news. The protests at the flagship state university over race and other bias issues had paralyzed the campus and forced the resignation of the system president and chancellor. When a student journalist said he had a First Amendment right to be there and take photos, Click said, "I can't hear you," and started chanting, according to a transcript released by the university system. She did apologize. Many professors defended her and the principle of academic freedom, but the earlier image of her became a symbol for others of attempts to muzzle freedom of speech in a public university system in chaos. The Board of Curators voted to terminate Click, an assistant professor in the communications department. The vote was 4-2.
Ooh, what do we learn from this? Never do anything when you're an assistant professor.
In front of a camera, certainly.
Before you have tenure.
Right.
Because your rights don't click in. Look, I don't fully understand. I don't fully understand what was going, what the background on Click was, because you had previous run-ins with the university. I thought in this one she was sort of defending the university's position, and therefore thinking that she was going to make hay with them when she said, "I need some muscle over here to get this guy out of here."
Well, she pushed she pushed the reporter, and
she just sort of pushed against his camera. I don't think she laid hands on him.
Okay, so
you touch me. You touch
so
me.
I take that you don't believe she should have been.
I think that there were plenty of times, and now that I'm on the campus, there are plenty of times when a professor will be overzealous or act improperly, and they don't get fired. She got caught, as it were, on a video protecting the rights of students who were trying to organize something and talk amongst themselves. And it was, yes, it was on the college green, but, you know, this was a small group of people who were trying to do some strategy. So, no, we don't want
to. By the way, that goes on,
Libby,
to interrupt for a second, that goes on all the time, including at the University of Albany, where they don't let the press in.
Right. You know, so I think that this was a matter of academic freedom, and that she was fired because of the pressure and the political correctness stuff gone awry at that university,
I think,
and they're not
was
dealing with the inherent racism that's at that university.
Yeah.
Are you saying that at the moment, because I, like Ellen, I don't really fully understand what was going on right then, but are you saying that these students, the students she was trying to shield, that they were having a discussion about what they wanted to do next.
Right.
And so that's not in the story.
Right.
How do you know?
It was part of the story.
I read it.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
I read the whole
said
story.
That these students, she was trying to shield these students who were trying to discuss what's coming next in terms of their organizing.
Right.
The
right.
problem is they were on the campus green. They were in a public space. So whoever this person was, and I don't think they were student journalists, I think they were somebody with a camera. And that's it, posing. You know, they thought, well, I can go in there and tape what they're saying. But it was a private conversation.
Well, this is a big issue. I mean, the fact that the University at Albany, for example, my sort of place of employment for a whole long time, is not willing. And it's a point Rex made yesterday and Rosemary made yesterday on the Media Project, if anybody wants to hear it. You know, they're keeping reporters out of these internal meetings with students and others who were supposed to be sort of
just earlier this week
figuring it all out. It's a tough one because the press really does have a right. If you're letting other citizens in, what's the rationale for not letting the press in?
Well, there are times when you want to have a frank conversation and feel like you can say what you need to say without it ending up on the 6 o'clock news.
Well, I've got to tell you something, Libby. She may have been a lot of things, but the one thing that I can say, it was stupid of her to yell, "I need some muscle."
Absolutely. That was not a good thing to do. I think that
you
was
know,
stupid.
You gotta, I mean, you've got a PhD. You've been educated. I mean, you know, don't go there.
She was caught up in the emotion of the entire thing, and that was clear.
Tim Tai was the name of the journalist. He is a student, but he was also on a freelance assignment from ESPN.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Oh, so it was a sports story.
Yeah. So it's a sports story that they were having this fight.
Well, I mean,
they
covered
about the basketball team?
No, but they covered news as well.
Oh, no, they don't.
Oh, they do too.
Oh, come on.
There was
But
remember now there was a sports component
the
of this
point
because
is
of the
oh,
football
this is true because
players
of the football players.
The point
right.
is
it's
the
a
guy
sports
was,
news.
There was
the
a
point,
sports component of
right,
it.
Right.
Okay, fine.
The point is the guy was a reporter and that's what we should be dealing with here. You know, and they're saying no, no press. Get some muscle in here to make sure the press isn't here. That is chilling
yeah,
when you say
not...
that's chilling when you say get some muscle to
sure. I get
kick
that.
The press out of here.
Mm-hmm. I get that. But as somebody who is yeah. now teaching public relations and understands and deals with the press, there are times when you don't want the press there.
Well,
now, it would have been
well,
better
I
if
think...
they went into a classroom and closed the door.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry, but that's, some, this is the something. Inherent tension between flax and reporters.
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like the term flack, but...
I do, actually.
Really, do you?
Yeah, that's what...
Yeah, I don't know.
It's, that's it's, you know what it comes from.
After they were...
Yeah, no, for the... Yeah, I know.
After they were reporters,
jacket.
They went over to the dark side and
well, this
flack.
Is true.
Some.
But I was never a reporter.
Yes, some. But I don't know. I don't... You can take that just so far. I mean, at what point can you say, yes, everyone would like some time and space away from... But if you were having a protest and it is being covered by the press and the press is there, then if you're out in the college green and you are protesting, then it's not like you want to have a private moment alone. That's what? Different behind than being behind and having a meeting that is closed to the press.
But why is it that... A couple of people getting together on that college green to have a private conversation has to automatically be fair game for the media.
Look, Libby, nobody wants the media there. I mean, we all who run non-for-profit organizations know that we have to have open meetings. Why do we have to have open meetings? So,
because it's the law.
Well, because why is it a law? It's a law because it has been adjudged by the society that we're better off having the media having, and the First Amendment, having free access as opposed to the comfort of Libby and her clients.
Oh, well. I don't know if every not-for-profit is subject to the open meetings law.
I don't think they are.
They are not. No. Only if you get funding, government funding.
Okay.
You know. So libraries, yes. Those who are association libraries, yes. But the WAMC Board of Directors, no.
No. And by the way, we're allowed to go into executive session and
that's
have
right.
when it's
well,
a personnel matter.
A, yes. But that's very different than what we're talking
yes,
about here
is.
Of
it's
having
incredibly
a public
difference.
A public
yeah.
A public protest,
yeah.
a demonstration mm-hmm. on a campus.
Who takes money, by the way?
That takes money, right. That is it's a state university campus, and it is a protest of which the media is covering.
Yes, yeah, so, but again, is every single private conversation during that protest fodder for the press?
But this wasn't a
that's
private
conference. Issue here.
This was not going
to
be a private
a couple
conference.
Of people were getting together to talk about
well,
next
not
steps.
A couple. It was going to be a larger thing, which is why the press was all there, why all the controversy was happening.
Would this have happened had she not said, let's go get some muscle and push the reporter?
Yes. This would never have happened.
Right.
She would not
okay.
have gotten fired.
So she got caught.
Yeah.
Dumb.
She was dumb. I mean, there was no two ways about
okay.
it.
Okay. Then we're all in agreement then.
I don't think she should have been fired for it.
Okay.
I think that there's much more egregious things that happen that people don't get fired
well, and
for.
We don't really know what the story was. All of us who have been on faculties know that this may have been a convenient moment to get rid of a thorn
no
in their
kidding.
Side.
Because clearly she was siding with the students of color.
We should note that the curator who made this ruling yesterday, this can be appealed and is not the end of the story.
And is
so
that,
for
the
whatever,
curator is there equivalent it, to the Board of Trustees?
Isn't it? It's an interesting...
Yeah. Or curator.
Yes. It's an interesting look. Makeup of how this yeah. works, but according to this article, that there is a chance for her to appeal and to be replaced. Let's finish up with some letters.
Robert says, "Come on, Libby, talk about protecting your milieu. Where's your liberalism now when an issue hits home? Alan's right. It was stupid. And from what I've read, she had supported freedom of the press in her teaching. All right." And wow, there's so many people wait till the end and that's
yeah,
when they don't
we
get
can't
it.
Read them all.
Hey folks, as a white person, I cannot help but feel a sense of guilt over the legacy of slavery in this country. I feel very bad for every African American who has experienced discrimination of any type. I wish that we as a nation could expand our perspective and notice how hatred, domination, and slavery predates the creation of the United States and the subjection of, and it goes on. Thank you for that. Cruz makes the winning argument. No, that's a press release, I believe. Yes, it is. Okay. Panel, the protesters that Tin wanted to interview were student athletes, hence the ESP connection.
Yeah, I said that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I stand corrected. Okay. I sit corrected.
Okay. Libby is wrong, says Luke. I work for ESPN. I covered news like this. I'm glad we're ending up with Libby having to take it and not me.
Just okay. Don't call me a New York.
Just
liberal.
The family dinner here.
Right, right.
All right. 15 seconds. Got time for one more letter.
Okay. Okay, they don't want reporters, says Sam, because it would expose the ranting untruths that occur in a public place that should be covered.
All right, we are out of time. I want to thank Alan and Barbara and Libby, and thank you for writing your letters. We love your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue the program after this short break.